Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where our guest today is the CEO of Mode Global Holdings, Ryan Moore. So hello, Ryan. Welcome to the Market Musings Podcast. How are you?
Great. I appreciate this opportunity to speak to you both.
Yes, we're quite looking forward to it, Ryan. I know me and you had an interview on Stopbox a week or so ago, and it was nice to meet you for the first time and do that sort of first interview with you and catch up with what was going on in Mode. But on the podcast, we're going to take it a little more casual. It's too early, I think, for a beer, not just in time, but also in terms of Monday. Probably not great to be having a beer in the hand, but that is the format of this podcast, a sort of a casual chat down the pub. So looking very much forward to it. And how are you, Kenny, joining us from Scotland?
Yeah, all good. Great to have you on, Ryan. And in true Scottish style, it's never too early for a beer, neither is Mark. You've got to change that mentality, so you do.
Yeah. Yeah, we can definitely do the next one over a beer, no problem.
Yeah, 100%. No, it's good to have you on, Ryan. We've had quite a few of your fellow directors on over the last couple of months, and it's been really interesting to hear their story, you know, how they get into the space. So I guess it's probably your turn now. So what we like to do in the podcast is we believe that, you know, people invest in people. You might have the best product or the best asset in the world, but if you don't have the right people behind the projects, then it's never going to succeed. So really, it's an opportunity for you to give us almost like a sort of potted history of Ryan Moore. And as, you know, Mark said in the intro before we started recording, you can go back as far as you want, you know, childhood, early education, where you grew up, first to go to university, what the first, you know, first job was, and ultimately the journey that has brought you to Mode. And then we can spend some time talking about Mode. So really, hopefully the next 10, 15 minutes, Ryan, it's for you to tell us a bit about yourself, and we can jump in with questions as and when.
Yeah, great. No, I really appreciate the platform that you've given Mode and myself to speak. And I think you're exactly right. I mean, you know, the most important aspect of any company is its people. And that's been a real focus of ours at Mode, of building a really strong team that really has strong skill sets and has a really strong desire to be successful with our mission statement. But just to tell you a little bit about myself, I grew up in the great state of Oklahoma, born and raised in the U.S. And as I went through school there, I ended up at the University of Tulsa, where I studied international business. I've always had a real desire to work in the global arena, be able to work and operate and communicate across various countries and cultures. And that's always been a big driver of a lot of things I've done through my career. And as I graduated from university, being from Oklahoma, being in Oklahoma, you know, one of the most important industries is oil and gas and the energy industry. And was recruited by Baker Hughes right out of school. And didn't think I'd spend as much time with Baker Hughes as I did, but ended up spending 14 years right out of school with them, and just had a tremendous career with the company, and got to experience a lot of different things. I think I moved 9 different times in 14 years, so was all over the place. Got to experience a lot of different cultures, a lot of different places to live, and really just kind of continue to feed that desire of working in different places and working across different cultures and different people. As I was with Baker Hughes, I had a really accelerated career path. By the age of 28, I was an executive within the company and was starting to lead, full size business units in different regions across the world. And as I progressed through those 14 years, ended up leading some of the largest business units for Baker Hughes. Everything across from technology development, to the manufacturing, the global footprint of manufacturing, all the way across the sales teams doing large B2B type sales, working with every major oil company that was out there. So it just really gave me a really strong perspective of how you develop technology, how you go to market with technology, and how you do the really large deals from a business to business perspective.
Okay. Is Baker Hughes, is it a PLC or is it private?
No, yeah, Baker Hughes is a large publicly traded company. Okay. So it's one of the top three oil field service companies in the world. And you know, you can probably look back in the news when GE actually bought General Electric bought Baker Hughes several years back. They since spun that back out. But I was the last few years of my career were spent working for Baker Hughes during that transition process with GE.
Okay, so you got from an early age in the experience of working in a PLC, but then also at an executive level as well.
Yeah, it was really a great career path for myself, and leading large teams, working in publicly listed company, you know, understanding what you've got to do from a reporting requirement and an execution requirement. So some great experience in the public realm.
Okay.
It looks as if you've been about, because there's Africa, Russia, Europe, Central US, Texas, Oklahoma. Yeah, so you've certainly had that. As you say, it's almost like you've been a troubleshooter and you've just been sent to the work needs done. But no, it's quite an achievement nowadays for somebody actually to stay at a company, you know, for that length of time. I know, you know, our parents, probably stayed at the same company most of their life because that's what was done. But nowadays, you know, people are moving on every 2 or 3 years. But, you know, to have 14 years at the one company is probably quite a long time. I think the most I've ever spent at one company is 8 years. So it's quite an achievement.
Yeah, no, I like I said in the beginning, I didn't think I would have spent 14 years of my life with one company. But, you know, the exciting thing was for me, they continued to challenge me. They continued to give me opportunities and different experiences. And like I said, I moved a lot, went to a lot of different business units and really, you know, just got to see businesses at different stages in their life cycle, everything from the startup of a business to a business that was well established, but the numbers were continuing to fall. And how do you turn that type of business around? And so it was really, you know, it was really interesting. I kind of created a reputation in that company of one that could go in, improve market share positions and drive strong profitability growth. And I think that was one of the biggest takeaways I had from my career there.
Yeah. And imagine some of these teams are, you know, pretty large. You know, sometimes it's quite hard to move or change direction for a big division.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most of these business units I was running at the end of my career were, you know, several thousand people. Maybe Baker Hughes, I think at the time was 30, 40, maybe even higher, 30 or 40,000 people. And so you can imagine these business units were large, and it was really about, you know, giving the company a very clear vision and being very clear on your objectives and your goals and just driving for alignment at the end of the day to be able to steer a large business like that in different direction.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously you've had experience at PLC level and there was a lot of technology, obviously, in Baker Hughes, but there seems to have been a change in direction. How did that come about, Ryan?
Yeah, you know, it's a question I get often. What made you make such a change? And I tell you, it's been a great change for me personally, just from the aspect of, you know, being kind of an expert within one industry, within the energy business, and working in that career for so long. But there's also a lot of similarities that really kind of drove me to financial technology at the end of the day. Probably, you know, 6-7 years ago, I first got exposure to Bitcoin. And, you know, I guess the most interesting aspect was that, you know, individuals could create a currency and outside of a government issued currency. And that kind of baffled my mind in the beginning. Like, how does this work? Right. It just kind of really piqued my basic interest of how does this happen? You know, what does this mean for business? What does this mean for the economies? What does this mean for global economies? And, you know, from there, I just kind of really started to watch it closely and just continued to have an interest as I learned more and more about it. And you know, eventually that led me to financial technology. Working in all these different places across the world, I started to quickly realize how hard it was to transfer money from one country to another country, whether it was from a business transaction or a personal transaction. And I just saw the fees and how long it took. And I was like, there has to be some better way. And, you know, you started looking at some of these financial technology companies and you start to see that there's people out there actually disrupting this and doing it with lower fees and much quicker timescales. And again, so, you know, that really piqued my interest of like, okay, like there's place for disruption here. And that really actually kind of led me to take a step back and get really interested in the current state of banks, specifically in the U.S. I was in the U.S. at the time, and looking at the banking infrastructure and just trying to understand what does it mean to disrupt banking. And like oil and gas, banking is one of the oldest industries out there, and you know, typically change has been slow to come by. But when you looked at this financial technology sector and what a lot of these companies and individuals were looking to do, it was really exciting. And you could really see that the environment was building for people to come in with new ideas and really disrupt the banking sector.
This switch then really, it did kind of come out of nowhere, did it? Or what you were reading about crypto and Bitcoin, and then you got your interest there in the crypto, and then into how you could how banks operate, how money is moved around the world, and really you just followed your nose, would you say?
Yeah, I really did. And during that time, right around that same time, I had met Jonathan a few years back, and Jonathan Rowland, who was our chairman and founder. And when I had left Baker Hughes, I gave Jonathan a call and said, you know, what are you working on? What are some things that you're interested in? And, you know, he had just recently founded Redwood Bank in the UK, which was quite a feat of, you know, getting a new banking license in the UK. And he was also doing it from a challenger perspective of really trying to create some back office technology that was going to accelerate that bank forward. And that's been a good success story. And, you know, off of that conversation, Jonathan said, well, what do you know about financial technology? And that's really where the idea of Mode started to become real.
Okay.
It's been an interesting transition. One of, I guess, of true interest in the beginning, of just kind of my own research and interest, and eventually really starting to turn into a real idea and the base of what is Mo Global Holdings today.
Mm. And maybe I don't know if it's a silly question to ask, but how excited are you about crypto and the crypto world?
Well, I obviously very excited, right? Mm-hmm. I've been, you know, when I started looking in this space, I started investing across crypto and across financial technology companies, mm-hmm. Because it really did pique my interest, and I still see clearly the business models and how these business models are going to continue to evolve to create real value and real profit within this space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have a ton of excitement about it. And I just think that we're only scratching the surface and really only in the beginning of this journey of what disruption is going to come.
Okay. And what would you say, what are your sort of key motivators, do you think? I mean, I'm guessing it's not oil and gas. Even when you worked at Baker Hughes, I'm not sure oil and gas massively excited you so much.
No, I would say oil and gas I'm not sure it really ever did excite me, to be honest. But you know, what did excite me was just the scale of the businesses, the ability to really build very strong and effective teams to go after a common cause. And you know, translating that into the financial technology sector, you know, now I have a real passion around what this sector, what this industry can do to disrupt the way everybody views and uses the financial tools that are out there today. And so, you know, I've got a passion behind it now. And, you know, through Mode, we're really building that team to really deliver game-changing technologies. And that's really exciting to me. And, you know, I have no problem getting up very early in the morning and working late at night when your passion and your desire to make something successful collide and come together.
Okay, good. Well, before we get into that Mode story and how that developed, I wonder if we can just spend a few minutes just talking generally around the crypto space and just get your sort of thoughts about the space in general, where it's at the minute. People have mentioned before it's like being in the dot-com boom, but you're on the right side of it. But at times it does feel it can be incredibly crazy, especially when you look at NFTs, for example, and these Ethereum rocks that you can get, which is effectively a bitmap image of a rock selling for lots and lots of money. It's hard to say, I think, where... Clearly, there is a bubble, and at some point that will go. It's hard to say how much bigger it'll get or where, what stage it's at. But I mean, can you give me your thoughts maybe on crypto and the sort of swings that we're seeing? You know, even just last week, there was a fairly big swing down on the day that El Salvador adopted Bitcoin as legal tender, which I think is a huge milestone in Bitcoin's lifestyle. And it was almost predictable that it would fall on that day, a bit like the stock market. It's the old buy on rumor, sell on news thing going on, probably. But where do you sort of think we are? Let's see if you can put a timeline on perhaps where we are in this development space, and what is your opinion on the swings and some of the craziness that sometimes goes on?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, loaded question, a lot to unravel.
Cover. Yeah,
at the end of the day, when you really look at the underlying technology. And you look at the underlying ability to create value around digital currencies, cryptocurrencies, you know, the use case is really strong and just it's game changing. It really is. And, you know, I think that is the one thing that people should really understand and remember through all the volatility and all the swings that we're seeing is that, you know, what has been created and what has really started to take impact over the last 5 years is really changing the way we interact with our finances and with money. And I think that's a great thing to be a part of. It's definitely exciting to me as we've just talked about. And with that said, I think that, you know, we're kind of at a new crossroads of the individual creating these different ideas and coming up with these great companies and creating new markets for different products. And now we're seeing the impact of government and regulations starting to come in as well. And I think this, over these next couple of years, it's going to be a really important time for these two kind of views of the world between a regulator and the innovative side of business coming together and really creating something that's sustainable and that can last, right? And I think we're starting to see that. I mean, you're seeing a lot of probably more negative news around the regulation, whether it's in the UK or the US. But I also think that that with the right mindset and the right approach as a company, it's going to become a major differentiator when you really crack the code of what regulators want to do, which at the end of the day is protect the consumer, make sure everything's clear. And then what we want to do as in the industry is being innovators and thinking about things differently and challenging kind of the status quo of the old system. If we can bring those two together and really create something unique and valuable for everyone, then I think we continue to see this industry accelerate in big ways. And I think that, you know, that ultimately leads to maybe potentially some less volatility in the market. But, you know, I think when I just think about, you know, there's cryptocurrency, there's a lot of noise around there around these different alternative coins, you know, what's of real value, what's not a real value. And when I think about it, I really focus in on Bitcoin. And, you know, I think Bitcoin is probably, you know, it's the most well-known, it's the best backed, it has the highest liquidity. And, you know, I think that one from a long-term investment standpoint is going to really prove its worth. Mm-hmm. And you know, the volatility that we see today, I think will continue to evolve, and we'll start to see where this is really going to sustain itself. But it's definitely it's sometimes difficult in the short term of dealing with the volatility. But you know, personally, I take a very long term view on Bitcoin, and it keeps me very bullish on it.
Okay,
yeah. I actually think crypto it's all about mass adoption, and I like to compare crypto to the internal combustion engine. You know, about 10 years ago, you know, electric vehicles were starting to come in and everybody was discrediting, it'll never happen, it'll never take off, nobody will be interested in it. And lo and behold, here we are in 2021 and all these auto manufacturers are saying we're starting making internal combustion engines in 2025, everybody's going electric. And everybody just accepts it because that's what's happening. And I think we're probably only maybe 3, 4, 5 years away from that sort of position in crypto as well, where it just will be such a momentum behind it that just mainstream businesses, banks, everybody will just have to go on the bandwagon and it will just become the norm. That's my way of looking at it. It's on the same general as the engine.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, we're seeing that adoption rate within Bitcoin, you know, continue to improve, especially with the institutions that we've seen come on over the last year. You know, that gives it a really incredible backing. And then, you know, with the countries that are starting to make it legal tender, I think that's going to be really interesting to watch over the coming years as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a good point you make as well about almost a meeting of minds between regulation and innovators, because one can stifle the other sometimes. And at the minute, it does maybe look like it's one versus the other. But we know that central banks are going to issue CBDCs. So, you know, it's only a matter of time before it does come in. Hopefully, it you know, the governments do still encourage innovation and all these exciting projects, but at the same time, bringing in that protection and confidence that your average consumer needs. And of course, that leads us nicely into Mode then and the story that you're building there. So, I mean, it started with a conversation with Jonathan. How did it lead on? I mean, what were those early discussions like about building a disruptive banking? Jonathan says a global super app disrupting banking. So can you remember those initial conversations you had and how the sort of the idea developed into the business it is now?
Yeah, I do. I actually remember the conversations very clearly. It was, you know, from the phone call that Jonathan and I had. He said, "Well, why don't you get on an airplane and come over here?" And so I was in the U.S. at the time and got on a plane, went over to Europe, met him and Richard Moorcroft, who's our chief operating officer. And we were sitting down, and you know, we were looking at this space. We were looking at, you know, cryptocurrencies and what that meant. We were looking at financial technology and what that meant. And our first product that we came up with was the digital wallet. You know, we just saw the need for a place to have funds electronically. And, you know, I think our minds were really running around all the different services that we could start to provide around that digital wallet. And the other thing, believe it or not, we were very early on this was around the regulation. And this is where the experience of Jonathan really came into play. And, you know, he'd been working in a regulated industries in the banking industry for, you know, 10 plus years at this point. And, you know, while we're talking about digital wallet, just as important, we were talking about, well, what kind of regulation do we need? And at that time, you're seeing a lot of cryptocurrency companies getting regulation in various countries that maybe didn't have the most stringent processes or stringent regulation controls. And that's where a lot of these companies were going. And we went, we met with these various regulators of these various countries. We wanted to understand, you know, okay, maybe we can get into business just by doing this. But we really left, we left those meetings knowing we want to do a digital wallet. But more importantly, we knew that we wanted to do it in a grown-up way, because we saw cryptocurrency as being kind of in its early days. And we really foresaw the regulation challenges that it was going to have. And we wanted to be in the forefront of that. And, you know, so at the time it was a risky choice to say, well, you know, we're going to hold off on going into business for a bit and we're going to get the right regulation, which we said was through the FCA in the UK. And, you know, that decision back in those early days, 3 years ago, really paid off for us well. And, you know, I think what you have now with Mode is we've built an incredible platform that doesn't get built overnight. It takes years. It takes process. It takes investment. It takes people. And now we're sitting on this very nicely trusted, regulated platform with e-money license, a crypto registration. And, you know, from here, it gives us a ton of runway to go grow our business substantially and really create unique products for our consumers and our merchants. So, yeah, the early days was all about the digital wallet and regulation. And mm-hmm. So here we sit now.
mm-hmm. And of course, you got the FCA regulation, big milestone, wasn't it, when that happened? It's very important. Not many of these are the challenger banks, let's say, have actually got that certification. So that's a real nice stamp of approval there, which is a big milestone. And of course, from an investment point of view, you listed recently on the OTC markets in New York to enable US investors to invest in Mode, which is another big milestone. So where do you sort of see, you know, the business developing?
Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, from an operational execution standpoint, you know, we're really focused on the UK market, and we're really focused on continuing to go out and sign up large merchants, and that is coming to fruition. You know, as we've just recently, you know, last May we announced the Hut Group deal with THG. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've gone live with that over the last couple of weeks, and that's just going to continue to accelerate as we integrate Mode onto all of their sub brands. And we're starting to see the first transactions through that, which is great. We're going to be kicking off a co-marketing campaign with them in the coming month. And so we're just really excited about where we sit in our journey. We have our wallet out there. We can buy, sell crypto. Now we're giving another experience for merchants and for our users to go out on making their everyday purchases. And while they're making those everyday purchases, they can also earn Bitcoin rewards. So we're really starting to create that ecosystem that we've talked a lot about. And all these products are really coming to fruition in that respect. And so, you know, and that as we've executed on getting those products out there and making them known to the public, it's also important for us to continue to look for ways to broaden our investment footprint. And that's why we ended up going out to the OTC in the U.S. was just the U.S. investor is looking for, you know, fintech opportunities. And they specifically like the UK because it's a familiar regulatory framework to the US. And so the US investor and getting access to them through the OTC listing is going to be very valuable for us as we go forward.
Okay. Good. And of course, the Hut Group went live, didn't it, very recently? And I was seeing some pictures of you able to pay certain merchants using the Mode app. So that's excellent. Can you let us know how that's going or not, or any sort of plans to expand on that?
Yeah, no, yeah, it's going great. It's going as expected. You know, we've been doing some, I guess probably over the last 2-3 weeks, we've been doing some light testing with specific users on a couple of the smaller brands of THG. But you're going to continue to see the pace of implementation pick up with all the brands. And as I said, again, you know, we're going to start a pretty heavy co-marketing campaign with THG to really get the word out about Mode and what it means to pay with Mode, mm-hmm. and why consumers should use it, which is, you know, one of the first attributes we have, or one of the first loyalty programs that we have that we're doing with THG is Bitcoin Rewards. So yes, everything is going as planned, and it's just going to continue to accelerate from here.
And what about further partnerships? I assume that's on the cards.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. So I mean, we're signing up people daily as we speak, and there's several large e-commerce brands that we're in. Kind of the final discussions with and trying to get those completed. The other thing that was really exciting is just last Friday, we've been in a partnership with multiple charities, but one specifically is Young Lives vs. Cancer. On Friday night, they had their large annual gala. I think it's called A Very British Affair. And at the gala, they were using our QR code payment system to take the donations for their raffle, and that was a great feat for us. It was the first time that we had done a significant amount of in-person, face-to-face payments over our QR code system. And so that was successful. And I think we are very excited about what we were able to do for Young Lives vs. Cancer at their gala. And it really opens up a lot of opportunity for us to work with charities like Young Lives vs. Cancer. You know, we're doing these transactions at much, much lower fees, 0.5% versus You go out to some of these charity websites where they're charging, you know, 6%, 7%, 8%. And so, you know, charities are really waking up to this, and we've got an opportunity to show them how to lower those costs substantially and get more of the money that's being donated into their accounts.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely a worthwhile cause. I suppose we've been talking maybe 30, 35 minutes now. It might be quite pertinent to finish off. Mark's always on my case to download Mode app and sign up. And every podcast interview we've done, I've kind of went a stage further. So I think at the end of the last podcast, I downloaded the app. The second last podcast, I downloaded the app. Then after speaking to, who did we speak to recently, to Mark?
We had, I think Jonathan was the last one, or was it? I think on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Anyway, but I've now done the KYC. So I'm at the funding stage now. So maybe after this this podcast, Ryan, I'll get the urge and I'll go and stick some money in Mode. But I know, Mark, you're fully up to speed with the Mode app and how it works and all the features.
Oh yeah, yeah, I certainly was. Unfortunately, because I'm in Europe, I'm not allowed to use it anymore. but yeah, before that happened, yeah, I had the Mode app and I was using it. Yeah, as we spoke to Jonathan before, when there'll be plans to come back to Europe when appropriate, and I'll be back on it again. But for the moment, yeah, I'm unfortunately can't get on. But yeah, when it was available, I was on and using it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, sorry you fell into that, Mark.
I'm a small number of people, I was told.
Constant responsibility to regulations and things like that. Yeah. But no, absolutely, I mean, Europe is very close on our roadmap of getting people like yourself back onto the app and things like that. But yeah, so we'll hope to have you back on there very soon. I'm going to hold you accountable on that and make sure you get signed up. And
yeah,
for the users, probably, you know, just since, you know, the both of you, the first time you've used the app, Mark or Kenny, I mean, it continues to improve with the things that you're going to be able to do on it. And you know, obviously, it kind of started off as a wallet for your GBP and Bitcoin. But you know, as we move forward, now you're going to be able to start to pay directly from your wallet and earn those rewards. So more and more is coming. We're definitely not stopping here. You know, we've got some very enticing large deals on the table that I think will continue to make this very valuable for our user base in the merchants as well.
Yeah, and of course the whole young generation wants to use a phone for everything, so it's the way the world's going. Bizarrely enough, just to finish off on that, actually maybe it's just where I live because it's a wee bit remote. I actually seen somebody paying for something with their watch the other day, which is the first time I'd ever seen that. That was a new one in me. I don't know if you've seen that before, Mark.
I have seen that before. Yeah, I have seen that before.
It was a bit strange. I wondered what he was doing, but then it clicked. So now the world is just going ahead at a frightening pace, and obviously, everybody's trying to adopt crypto into their life, and I think it'll become seamless anyway. It'll just be an app, and you'll be using it whether you like it or not. It's just the way the world's going. So, yeah, bring it on. That's what I say.
Well, we're trying to make it as easy as we can for you, Kenny. So that's definitely our goal: a good, seamless, easy experience.
Perfect.
Good. And what about just to finish off then, because obviously investors will be listening to this, and you know now things are really motoring on, and you've got the partnership with the Hook Group. You've mentioned other partnerships. Will you be able to release some nice tangible information or data, you know, financials in the near future, do you think?
Yeah, so we'll be releasing. Yeah, stay watching. We'll be releasing financial information in due course. Mm-hmm. We have requirements as a public company to do so, and certain dates that we have to meet. So you know that will all be done in due course. And absolutely, I mean we're committed to being as transparent as we can on all the business opportunities that come through. And you know, the minute that we can speak to all those, we try to get them out there as soon as possible. But we're very, very focused on execution, and there's a lot happening and getting our payments business up and running, and we're live now, and that's just a huge feat for us. Mm-hmm. And it really starts to change the trajectory of our business and what we can go do as a company. Secondly, it's just really about getting our story out there to the investor community. We want to continue to bring people in the fold of what we're doing, because we really sit at a unique position in this intersection of crypto payments and open banking. There's no other company out there that is doing what we're doing in that respect. And so, you know, we've got a very unique story. We think it's very attractive to investors. And so, you know, while we're focused on executing, I'm very focused on getting our story out there to the investment community, especially in the UK and the US now. So a lot's happening, I guarantee you that. And we'll continue to keep investors updated as much as we possibly can.
Great. Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Ryan, on the podcast. And unless, Kenny, you have any final thoughts?
No, I'm all good, and it'd be good to get you back on, Ryan, now that you're in the driving seat as CEO, and we can perhaps get an update before Christmas. That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I always look forward to speaking to you. So thanks for your time today and the platform to speak with everyone.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ryan. Okay, take care, and we'll speak soon.
Cheers.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Bear, Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.